All right, welcome back, guys. Thank you so much for joining us here at Red Ice TV. Henrik, it's good to have you back. We have a very interesting and important show for you lined up today. We're going to talk a bit about Sweden, the state of how things are in Sweden, in my country. And, of course, this is something being mirrored, actually, in many other Western countries now as well. We have a guest with us who's been run through the ringer, really, harassed, harangued by the Swedish, state, ultimately, but the police forces. She is a former associate professor at Stockholm University. Biljana Martinovski is with us to talk about what has happened to you. Welcome, Biljana. It's great to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Henry, for having me. Thank you.
Sure, you bet. So why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and kind of explain, so before we go into like all the things that's happened to you, I know it's a kind of a longer story as well, but whatever you feel is pertinent for people who don't know about you or your work, tell us a bit about yourself.
I'm an associate professor in Swedish. It's called docent. This is an academic title. It's not particularly a position, so I still keep it. And I was employed in Stockholm University since 2010. I worked in Gothenburg University, and I worked for Institute of Creative Technologies, University of Southern California, from 2000 to 2007 about that time. And then since 2008, I worked in Sweden and a number of universities, including Gothenburg University and then Stockholm University. From 2014, I decided to affiliate only as a researcher and to do research instead of teaching. And at the point of the events that of interest here in this show, in 2017, I am affiliated associate professor with the university. This is very important for us in Sweden because all the universities are state universities. So in order to get funding for a project, a research project, and be able to work, we need to have an association with an university. Otherwise, we cannot apply for funding, and we cannot do research. So this is a must in order to have a job, so to say, as a researcher. I create my own job by creating my own project and employing myself and employing others. And the university is the host. The university receives the money, but I am the one who is coming up with the research ideas and the research project. And in a sense, it is employing me once I have come up with the idea and the project. So a lot of people probably don't realize how important it is for a researcher to have that, and how important it is that this position of mine was removed, and the way it was removed. So it's not just she's not 100% employed teacher or lecturer, which I was for many, many years. You can also choose to do research on your own projects if you can do that. A lot of people cannot have their own projects; they just teach. And I could have own projects and have had a number of projects with Stockholm University, inviting, for instance, I organized the International Conference on Group Decision and Negotiation, where many, more than hundreds of renowned scholars within group decision negotiation arrived at Stockholm University, and we performed the entire conference there. We started a number of projects also. I've helped Stockholm University to get contacts with my department and Institute for Creative Technologies and bring their PhD students to learn what it is to create virtual humans and what virtual humans actually mean and how they can be used and developed and so on. So we have had a number of research projects together with that university, and I was preparing a new one, and I was suggesting a new project for them, and we have discussed this issue with them as well. So it was not something they didn't know of. They were not aware of, so to say. The project that I was suggesting in 2017 was to create a virtual therapist, because this kind of virtual therapists have been used for soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder in the United States. Mm-hmm. And I have worked with these kind of systems, I'd say. And I thought, why can't we use this for other purposes? We can use it to help the victims of horrendous crimes in Sweden, gang rapes and rapes.
Which, of course, is just for those who don't know or newcomers, have skyrocketed in Sweden the last, the last few decades, really, but astronomically in the last 10 or so, I'd say.
Yes, and so that's when the sort of the idea of the application of this technology came to my mind when I read number of cases where, for instance, there was one woman who was raped by six men. She was driven to some kind of basement, and she thought she's going to some kind of party. And they just put her in the basement and started raping her all together at the same time and separately for hours and hours and hours, as she described, because I read the verdict and I read her statement. This was as a woman, as a private person, as a woman, as a human being, reading this is extremely disturbing. It takes me weeks to just think about it and understand how a human being feels in such a moment, especially Sweden, a country that is renowned for being feminist, for being especially aware of women's rights and children's rights, because many of the cases that I found and got from the courts in Sweden when I started preparing for my project involved actually child rape. We are talking about thousands.
Yeah.
So I wanted to. I thought that the technology.
You wanted to help. You wanted to help. That's what you're talking about. You wanted to help.
I wanted to have some kind of application of this technology that is helpful to society. This technology is used to help soldiers, for instance, but we could also use human beings that are not involved in war. In a sense, the attack on the Swedish civilry and the civilians in Sweden is so intense. When I read and required from the courts all the court ledgers for the past 5 years, and when I received them from each court, the 43 courts, and I received them in my home and on my computer, I found out that there were about 50,000 cases. Many of these cases, most of these cases, so we are talking about more than 90% of the cases never got to a court. They never got a verdict. These perpetrators, whether they actually did or not, or to what extent, and so on, have been released, and they are among us.
Yep,
this means that there is a lot of repeated sexual crimes, and the reason why they're repeated is because there is no timely justice served for the victims. And then as I have been started to study this somehow, preparing my project idea, I was contacted by a number of victims or relatives to victims. Mm-hmm. Which surprised me on Twitter, and they were saying that they thank me for taking their side. I was surprised by that because I thought all of us, everybody wants others to feel well, and nobody wants to see such sadistic crimes happening in next door.
Right.
As we are eating dinner or watching a movie, all of a sudden we hear that another co-human being next to us is actually dying under the sexual violence of some man. It's very special to contact or to be in contact with victims and with their families, because we have to realize that the victim is not only the person who is gang raped. or viciously attacked and raped, but it's also the family members, the parents, the spouses, the children. Number of the women who were raped are actually mothers. So every individual victim actually has a group of people around them who are severely affected, and they are also victims. So let's count for each of these 50,000 cases that have reported such a sadistic crime. They involve 100,000 if we double it, and they actually involve 500,000 if you count it that each of these women or children have at least 10 friends and members in the family that are directly affected by their condition, by their state, that they're suffering with them and suffering around them, trying to help them, not being able to do that. And all of them are saying one and the same thing, that the Swedish state is helping the perpetrators more than they're helping the victims.
Yeah.
And that is a very interesting and very important thing for entire Europe, all humanity, and particularly locally in Sweden to consider and to think about what are we doing to help them and how are we helping these people. Do we have the technology for it to do that? Do we have the knowledge to do that? What kind of treatment there is? And when I found out about the treatments for post-traumatic stress for gang rape and rape victims is very limited. They get about 10 visits and to a therapist, and they don't necessarily meet a specialized therapist because many of them have post-traumatic stress. Post-traumatic stress, as I have a number of times explained, is not simply a psychological state of distress. It is a morphological change of the brain. So you cannot, we don't know yet how one can treat this in the best way. There is only one kind of therapy that kind of functions and works to change the morphology of the brain, the state of the amygdala.
I mean, we're kind of getting into the weeds of that, but it's kind of interesting. Isn't that for protective purposes? Kind of in the same sense that you get when you get a trauma, your brain can actually isolate that psychologically speaking. In a way, to protect you from, like, shielding you from those bad experiences, you actually go on and continue. I don't know if that's part of it. I've just heard about that.
Well, the different, each individual and each body can have different reactions. But, of course, a person with post-traumatic stress after such an intense trauma is doing anything to avoid experiencing the trauma again.
Right.
But the trauma is in the brain. The trauma is so to say, etched in the brain. And they cannot leave it. They cannot. They are always in that state. They always expect that it will happen to them again. You and I might be walking on the street and seeing trees, and they're walking on the street and they're seeing the perpetrator raping them.
Right.
So this is a very special condition because it is, you cannot avoid it. It is in your brain, and you can't do anything about it. The only thing you can do is treat the actual issue. And this is one thing that all the victims should know and should hear, is that it is in their power to overcome it with the right therapy. So I was thinking, if we do this kind of virtual therapies, they can have this help next to them all the time, and they can address it. And these therapists look very, very realistic. They're kind of trained as a real therapist, because the actual therapy is simple. You have to constantly expose the victim to their traumatic memories, the most traumatic memories. Then the body gets into this state. You know, the heart starts beating, they start sweating, for instance, or they get cold, and their mouth gets blue, and so on. So they experience physically, biologically, the state, and then you interrupt it.
Yeah.
You interrupt it, and you interrupt it, and you interrupt it each time they remember it. The very specific memories and very specific situations, everything around them. And then you remind them that this is not happening. They're not there. They are in a different world. And it's very hard for a person with post-traumatic stress to actually realize. So you need to do some special exercises, and breathing exercises, mental exercises, mm-hmm. and so on.
I just want to mention as well, of course, now all of that you're talking about is great. That's to help people that have already experienced the crime, so to speak. Ideally would be in a situation where the state take the responsibility to prevent it from happening to begin with. So tell us what happened because you started speaking out about these things, drew attention to this. What happened at that point with you?
Then I formulated the project, and I talked to my colleagues, presented the idea and so on. It's not that everybody knows about it, particularly if you're working with technology, you're not aware of this because it involves a lot of psychology as well and psychiatry actually and the anatomy of the brain and so on. So I presented it. They thought it was interesting. We're going to work on it. The issue is that in many of the cases, the women are attacked by people that do not speak their language, right? There, many of them were actually aliens, and we would say that when it comes to the gang rapes, it's more than 95% are aliens. Yeah. for the past 10 years. If we are going to create this kind of technology, we need to know the languages spoken as well, because it is very special that this is happening in the same time. You don't even understand the other person. It's an additional disaster. It is part of their experience. So we had to address how they linguistically interpreted and how they process that information, and when we are simulating it, we need to address that. And linguistically, it is an issue how to do that. I am a doctor in general linguistics, first of all, and then I am also associate professor in another field, which is human-machine interaction with direction towards design of virtual humans. So I could combine the knowledge from these two different fields, which I have worked for many, many years, both as a teacher, lecturer at universities, and as a researcher. And that's what I did. I presented it, and it is difficult. It's a difficult issue. Emotionally, it's a difficult issue, but otherwise, technologically, it's quite interesting as well. And there is no such project. There is no such virtual therapist in Sweden at all. And I got in contact with scholars from University of Southern California who have developed this for English speakers. So I could use the kit for the virtual human and then transfer it to Swedish, which hasn't been done before, and would be very interesting to do. And they were very interested to do it and interested to participate, to cooperate, and give us even their results of their research to use. I was excited to do this. And then all of a sudden, I received on the 18th of then I there was a site that I had seen on Twitter. It was an American site based in Los Angeles, actually, media site called gangraposweden.com. And it said U.S. media based in Los Angeles. And I've lived in Los Angeles for about altogether 8 years exactly. And then I visited there. So I've been altogether, you could say, 10 years. So I know the place, and I was wondering why is this American site listing statistics and verdicts of gang rapes in Sweden. That was kind of interesting and strange, and I never understood who actually created the site and who did it, but I wanted to find out if the data are correct. So that's why I contacted all the courts in Sweden and asked them to send me the ledgers. And through the ledgers, I could identify the numbers of the cases and I could check if the data on that site were correct. And all the data on that site were correct. And all the statistics that site showed.
They had done the same thing as you did, which was to request the ledgers and go through it.
Exactly. They have done this and I just repeated what they did and I checked the numbers and I read the verdicts. Any Swedish person should read these ledgers and these verdicts because you will see a horrifying pictures of what our co-humans are experiencing next to us. And I, as a human being, cannot stand to see, to know that this is happening, and I'm just completely dispassionate to it. Of course, the solution to this is also a political solution because many of the aliens are not citizens who have committed these crimes, and this could very well be solved not only by creating virtual humans and therapies for the victims who have already suffered, but you could prevent it. Either removing these people from our community or stopping them from coming to our community. These are two major measures that could have been taken. I am not a politician. I'm not involved, never been involved in politics. I don't think it is simply a political issue. It is an issue of life. And no president has given me life, but the one issue is to solve the help the victims and the people around them, because they also can get post-traumatic stress in association with people who have post-traumatic stress, and then of course the issue of clearly. One way to stop it is to not allow this to continue, and to stop it happening you have to understand the morphology of the crime. You have to understand who did it, how they do it, where they come from, who are the victims. You know, these are basic things for any crime. Why should we keep this secret? Why is this secret when it comes to a very, very serious crime and very serious offense? There is no law in Sweden that stops the journalists from showing the morphology of the crime. Who is the victim and what is the background of the victim? Not only the age and gender, but anything else that can help us to resolve this problem. And we all need to be engaged in it because it is not only an issue of the police or therapists, but also of other co-human beings. And that's why we vote. That's why we elect our representatives. That's why we choose them to help each other as a community. So this is what I found. This is what I knew. And then all of a sudden on the one more thing, very important, of course, in our context, is that this site had a Twitter account, and the Twitter account suddenly in September 2017 started informing that someone is trying to shut them down, to close them. And I read it, and I retweeted number of statements like this, and I don't think that it's good to stop it and to close it, because this was the only site that informed and gave us access to the actual verdicts. The verdicts are protected by the Freedom of Information Act, and these people have been convicted. All the cases that were listed there were actually convicted criminals. There is nothing that stops us for understanding it or reading it. Any Swedish citizen can require this information and read it themselves. This site has simply done a service to us and put together all this information just to show us, okay, here is what's going on. Gang rape and sadistic sort of violence, and yet the perpetrators are not deported, even if they're aliens and they're not Swedish citizens. They're not deported time after time after time. Yeah. That is just another issue. And I thought that this, it's not good to close the site. You could protect the victims. You could do that. And I suggested to the site on Twitter openly suggested that they could protect the identity of the victims. Many of the victims have not required, secretes, as it's called, to cover their names, for instance, which I think they do because they don't know what to do. And you cannot expect a person that has survived such a sadistic crime and is fighting for her life to know everything about the judicial system and their rights.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're barely breathing. They're barely breathing.
That's right.
So on the 16th of September 2017, I retweeted one claim by this site, which said that communication strategist in some organization, NGO organization, I suppose, called Jag är här in Swedish. One could also interpret it as Jag är här. I'm hunting here or I'm here. They were
just the Me Too for just to translate, that's the Me Too movement in Sweden. That's what they call it there.
Really? They don't. No, it's not Me Too.
Okay, I've misunderstood that then. Okay, I thought it was kind of similar to that, but no, okay.
No, they're dedicated to killing hate crime online. So they do swarm attacks. They attack in hundreds and thousands.
Okay, gotcha.
And just silence sites and silence people's views and silence people whatever they're saying. And they also report to the police, and they report to Facebook. In this case, there was a reference in this tweet. There was a reference to a person who is the communication strategist for this organization, and since this organization says that they're dealing with hate crimes, I very, like, shortly, at that time you couldn't write very long tweets. It was shorter tweets. So you had to really, be careful how many, letters you use when you say something. So I shortened it and I said, well, hate organization, dedicated to hate, crimes or hate in media. And, the person who they're referring to was a colleague from Stockholm University. It said that this person was teaching communication and media at Stockholm University, and at the same time was working for this organization that is dedicated to silencing both media and individuals on social media. So I thought this is a contradiction in terms. Yeah. If you're a journalist, you're working and teaching people in communication and media, then you are promoting communication, promoting expression, right? Promoting free speech. But instead, this person was doing on one side teaching communication, on the other side shutting down people.
Yeah.
So I actually asked the question because I couldn't believe it was true. And is this really true? Is this correct, or is this site somehow lying about it? It was a question. I translated what the site, the Gangrape Sweden was saying in this tweet, which was, this person is engaged in shutting down media. And I said, is this really possible to work, to teach the communication at the same time to shut down communication? So, then I didn't get an answer. I just, you know, continued with my life. And on the 18th, that is 2 days later, I receive a letter from the university. You have that letter there. I send you the letter from a professor at the university, a colleague of mine that I've worked with and had projects with, who tells me...
Is it this one here?
This one here,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And what we need to concentrate on here is, I have seen that you seem to be active in Twitter discussing, among other things, immigration, nationalism, and lots of other sensitive political issues. It is fine for you to do that as a person, but since you're mentioning DSV as your current employer, I see this as a major problem for us. I have not mentioned the DSV as my employer. I am simply posting my CV, and on my CV, it says who I am associated with, who I have worked with, and who I work with. So this is not true. First, it's not true statement. I was on Twitter as a private person, but my titles are part of my my private person. You know, I am a PhD, and yes, I am an associate professor, and these are titles I own. They're my property. I have the copyrights on those, so to say. And if they want to remove that, then this is a different procedure. But here he is actually saying that because I am discussing as a private person politically sensitive issues, removes my affiliation with the Stockholm University, which means that I cannot have any more research projects. I cannot apply for research projects, and I cannot get funding for research projects. That's what that means.
All right.
I received this letter, and I'm very shocked and surprised. No one has called me and told me anything about it. No one called the phone and said, okay, we have an issue here, and we don't want a discussion on these issues. Could you please not discuss political issues? But how can they stop me? There is no rule that I have seen that stops me from discussing political issues, particularly when we are preparing for an election in 2018, a very important election for Sweden and for the European Union, as it was. I simply didn't feel good about it. I was shocked, and I didn't feel good about it, and I didn't understand why it's happening. But to this letter, as you see the email, my colleague had attached a screenshot of that same retweet with a translation and a question where I'm asking, is it possible that this particular person, Kaiser Klein, was her name, is working at the university teaching media and at the same time shutting down people's views and media in social media. So that was the only way, the only kind of hint I got from him that this has to do something with that tweet. So I wondered, who is this? How is this related to what he's doing? Why removing me from the university is related to that particular tweet? So I went down to see who is this person, you know, and what is this organization, Yoga Hair, who are they? And then I found out that it is led by an Iranian-Swedish woman. Her name is Mina Dennert, who has worked at the National TV, and her husband, who probably still works at the National TV, and that it involves a lot of journalists, a lot of politicians that are part of this organization, which is shutting down co-citizens' views that they don't like on one or another way, not necessarily hate crime or hate expressions, any kind of emotional expression. So I saw them shutting down victims who try to say something in media. Have in mind that a lot of these victims, the rape, gang rape victims, have very hard time talking about this. They have very hard time sharing anything about it. So if they feel frustration, of course, which they feel, and sadness and anger and anything, they have practically no one to talk to. So if they could use an alias name or another name, they could... For them, the social media is a way of discussing or opening, sharing their experiences. This is such a sad situation, because there was one woman who was raped, viciously attacked in her own home by two men, immigrants. from Syria, she said, who stormed into her apartment, and she was raped very badly. She had physical damages. These people were her neighbors. And despite DNA, despite police investigation that she kind of dared to report them, the investigation was closed. And when the investigation was closed, despite this incredible effort this woman has made to report them and to survive, given that they're her neighbors, she committed suicide. Her name was Angelica. And she shared her farewell letter to the world. We're not talking about only Sweden or only Europe or only European Union or any other political entity or the earth. We're talking about her life in the universe. So she shared her farewell and goodbye on Facebook. I can't imagine a more sad sort of testimony of the coldness of the society we've created, where a person has no other way to communicate.
Yeah, the utter failure.
Yeah, I read it many
times. It's amazing.
And when I see these people, thousands of people and politicians and journalists and celebrities on this Yoga Hat group on Facebook, shutting down also victims and the relatives of the victims when they are frustrated, when they have no other way of dealing with this. They have no help. They're not getting help, you know, because once the investigation is closed down and stopped, you're on your own. You have, even before, you're kind of on your own, but you have no help. You know, you have no, how are you going to motivate that you need this help? How are you going to motivate that you're so alone and so hurt and so sick?
Yeah.
So I think that from a sort of social and even psychological point of view, it is important to offer people an opportunity to share their feelings and to offer them a sense of belonging to a community that cares. They say it takes a village to raise a child, but it takes a village also to help a victim of a crime such as this to survive and continue living. They trust humanity anymore.
And protect them to prevent that from happening, right?
And protect them, to feel that they're not alone. It's even a simple thing, like, you're not alone. We're there. We understand. We have empathy. We are empathic people. And this empathy that Sweden is talking about, that they're having for the rest of the world, is not actually shared with their own co-citizens.
That's right. Yeah. Right.
And that is, I'm in principle and in practice challenging the idea that you should shut down people's emotional expressions. If they have been subjected to such a crime, they should be able to express themselves. It doesn't mean that they are becoming terrorists or killers. They just the opposite. It helps them to not have so many emotions that they cannot communicate. The communication helps them to deal with their emotions. When you don't help them, then what they do, she committed a suicide.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing there. The someone has to be there and say, this is a mistake. This was never meant to happen. This, you know, like things like that, that says that this is an anomaly. Now the signals we're sending is, well, whatever, you're on your own. We're not even going to recognize that actually it's worse than that, because when they actively, you have groups that actively target and shut people down after they want to share the story, then that's a completely different ballgame altogether.
She can't even say anything. Yeah. Like, not only that you have been raped and you have no control over your body, but you have no control even the emotions that you have, which are natural emotions. Yeah. It's natural to be upset. It's not natural to shut down the emotions of a victim. So this person that has been involved in shutting down others' views, I was actually working at the university, but probably not in this moment, but she had been working in university. She has been a PhD student, and she has not finished her PhD for quite many years. Like, it's about a decade. Then I found out that who is this person who has the power to do that just because of one tweet. Is this a decision of the university, or is this somehow influenced by someone? So I required communications in the university that involved my name about 2 months later. And I found out that this was not a decision, independent decision by the university. It was actually, they took the decision and they did what they did. But actually, this person has been sending this kind of letters. Look at her. She's sharing the site Gang Rape Sweden, and my colleagues from this organization, Jag är här, have been exposed by the Nazis, and we have police reported this. So notice how vague the statement is, and it's very special because it says police anmeld, just police anmeld is reported, police reported, but it's in brackets. So what is police reported? Who is police reported? Am I police reported? Is the side case police reported? Are the Nazis police reported? What Nazis? The Nazis from the Second World War, or what are you talking about? So she is saying that I have been employed in Stockholm University. Well, yes, she was listed in Stockholm University as a teacher there in media and communication. She was listed, and there is nothing we can do about it. This is just what it was. If she has not having any, if she didn't have any course to teach right now, that's a different issue, but she was listed there, and both as a PhD. If you're listed as a PhD in Sweden, you can be listed for 20 years.
Right.
Without producing anything. We are paying these people, you know, but they're not producing anything. So they could be listed there for forever. And so she's asking here, where is Biljana? Can you locate Biljana for me? it's difficult for me to understand why Stasi. You should be associated with her and legitimate her. And then, P.S., postscript, number of people in the Stockholm University have been informed about this. The security department, the press, the communications and press department, etc. So the fact that she has, first she's saying here that she has police reported me, then she's saying that I am a Nazi because I'm retweeting that site and associated with Nazis from the Second World War who started the Second World War. And then she's saying that she's contacting also the security department at the university. Security, like, have I attacked the university in any possible way? Have I entered there with a bomb? In what way is this a security issue for the department for this particular department or the university as such, and the press department? Why is she contacting the press department? Well, are they going to inform the population that Biljana Martinovsky has retweeted one media site?
Right, yeah.
So it's very interesting how they work, because this thing with the postscript they do a number of times. In the PS they inform that what they are actually doing, if they're doing it. So anyway, I found out that you could scroll to the other letters. It's not one letter; there are many.
Multiple.
Letters.
Yep.
Yeah, multiple letters. Here she's sending.
This is the top one of that same, right? Is it
the same one? Yeah,
scroll
you
down.
Can see that it's sent. Then she's sending another letter. Where is she now? he doesn't respond. So she's again saying, we have to talk. What next day, you know, 21st of September, where is she? What is she doing? Are you doing something about this? This is very important for my personal security. In what way is it for security to retweet something? This has been reported to the police, he says, she says to my colleague. So this is a very interesting statement here. She's pressuring my colleague to take measures and remove me from the university and remove my CBE and anything that has to do with my association with university.
Yep.
And it's pressure. It's not just one question. It's a number of letters.
Yeah, threats too, in terms of kind of implying that if you don't do anything about this, the security is involved, police is involved, like you better act on this now or else kind of thing, you know, veiled
threats. Yes, and this is police reported. If you don't do it, then you are not obeying the and so on. Although the police has not contacted the university, right? So,
yeah.
But he feels that it's pressure and he doesn't understand what's going on. So I don't know. I don't know how my colleague was thinking, but this is, you see that there is a copy to Stefan Niemann. This is a person who is employed in the communication department in Stockholm University, which means that she is now escalating the pressure because this is now communicated also with other departments at the university, not just with that particular department.
Yeah.
So he, of course, felt pressure. And I don't know what he'll have there. Yeah, so then she also says, she asked him, you're not mentioning my name there, are you? So Kaiser Klein sends a letter to Unifors and says, are you not mentioning my name? And then he says, no, your name has not been mentioned. So not only that she's claiming that I'm police reported, not only that there is a pressure and threat, but there is also secrecy. This is supposed to be secret.
Interesting.
I'm not supposed to know that Jörg is behind this hit job.
Yeah, so there's no links back to them. They can have they can put on pressure. It's this idea that you're not allowed. I mean, it's people understand it that are listening now, but it's essentially like a Stasi environment. There's a secret police going around telling different
secret
people of influence what to do, how to act, and then like cover up the tracks and veiled threats. It's horrific. It's very interesting. Very interesting that this goes on in a supposed open democratic society where everyone's voice matters and everyone should get heard, etc. But this is just.
It's very open.
Words.
Very
right.
open.
Yeah.
don't show my name. Don't tell anybody that I pressured you to do this. And the interesting part.
You can't. In other words, you can't face your accusers, right? No, they silence you. Remove your. They smear you. Essentially, that's what it's about: smearing you, destroying your reputation, taking away your doctorate, your PhD title, and all the other titles, and then that's they call it, unpersoning you in 1984 terms. And then making sure that you can't respond to your accusers. The next step, of course, is to censor you altogether from Twitter and other social media, so you can't even reply to it, right?
Yeah. So I don't know what they thought. I mean, did they think that I will commit suicide when this happens? Because it's kind of this is a career assassination. It's a form of assassination. Do they think that I would die after this and stop thinking, or what were they thinking? Of course, I'm going to require information, and I will require to know why this decision was taken and how it was taken, and I have the right to require this official correspondence because the Stockholm University is state-funded. So every communication with their emails from the university is a public document.
Now, these are very interesting. And forgive me, but I didn't keep an eye on the dates of these, whether if they are in chronological order. But these are the ones you have on your pinned Twitter post as well. And this is when she also kind of escalates the language in the sense that she associates it with kind of popular, movements like alt-right or extreme right or things like that. Tell us about this email right here we're looking at.
This email is sent to, as you can see, this email is sent to AITGUSC. That's the university department I've been teaching in, and that is Gothenburg University. GU is for Gothenburg University. So she's sending a letter to the head of the communication and semantics. This is a professor that I know quite well. And so now this letter, the other letters, was sent to the head of the department in where I worked in Stockholm University. And now she's sending a letter to another university, to another department, to another colleague of mine. And I translated it. I am an official translator, so I, since I am a linguist and a lecturer, so this should be a legitimate translation, and I also posted the original in Swedish. I suggest the same letter. I suggest you look at her Twitter. I attached screenshots so that you can see how the profile looks like, where she links to you. To you, I'm not linking to Gothenburg universities at all. I just have a CV, and my CV is in different departments and the different universities. I didn't have a personal site. My CV was just published by different universities. So I have a CV, yes. I have history, yes. I have had the employers. It doesn't mean that I'm linking to each one of them separately because of I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, like here are my personal opinions, right. And this is the university I work at, and they back my opinions. There's nothing to do with that, but...
This has nothing to do with it. Right. There's no such statement. She's creating it, but it's not there. Mm. And then she says, yes, she's extreme right, alt-right, etc. Stockholm University established that the only thing she seems to like is Putin, possibly Trump.
I like that. That's hilarious.
This hilarious.
Oh,
and
wow.
The matter is the democracy and hate crime section at Stockholm police. I mean, give me a break. Because she says that I like Putin and possibly Trump. I've never tweeted anything about Putin. I don't know Putin. Whatever information is coming from other media, even if I did or have I met him, how does she know
Slavic, you have a Slavic sounding name, you know, you have to be, you're a Putin agent, right? Let's be honest about
this.
That's
what she's trying to
You're here to undermine Swedish democracy. And I mean, these people are delusional.
Yeah, she's trying to imply here that because my name is the way it is, that I have something to do with Russia, and that's why I like Putin. But
right.
If you look at my Twitter, I'm a Trump supporter from the moment I joined Twitter, and for very good reason,
right.
Because Clinton and Clinton's wife were associated with a lot of rapes. And
that's absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't support anyone who is involved in rapes.
They covered a lot of that up, actually. Yeah, a lot of that
has
still not come out fully. But yeah, you're right. So, I mean, but that's like, obviously, whatever. These are accusations that are leveled against you in order to continue to discredit you and piggyback the issue of already a frenetic hysteria that's going on mostly all over the West, really, about, you know, these political leaders like Putin, like Trump.
Yeah, this is it's one of my favorite sentences. I would like to, I'll put it in a frame. She's an extreme light, alt-right. The Stockholm University established that the only thing she seems to like is Putin and possibly Trump. The matter is that the democracy and hate crime section at Stockholm police.
Jeez.
So, and P.S., notice that there is again postscript. If I were you, I would contact her. I know that Juno Forsch, professor at Stockholm University, has her Gmail address, and urge her to stop linking to Gothenburg University. I would, if I were you, if it is true that she is no longer employed with you, remove her.
Yep, that's right. And it's a little bit portion of the letter. Let me just readjust as we can see. It says, remove her homepage, but it's just a suggestion. we have been dragged in the police, the cops into this, like we're going to come after you, but it's just a suggestion, you know, no worries.
Yes, the police is investigating this, but don't worry. My homepage is I was the first webmaster of my department in linguistics at Gothenburg University, and the person she's writing to is my supervisor.
Oh,
so we know each other very well. He knows that I created not only my homepage, the department, I created everybody's homepages in the department back then, you know, when the first homepages were ever created. And I also posted the first courses that were done online was my work on his behalf. He asked me to do it. So it is very, like, without understanding the history of, you know, of our relations and so on, this is not a private page. This is a homepage created by the university. The university asked me to do this and so on. So just to look at the style and the thinking, is it really reasonable to call someone alt-right and extreme right? And whatever that means, because they associate right or extreme right and alt-right, these terms have no definition. They're just thrown around and repeated millions of times without any definition. But as for a scholar, the first thing you want to know is, what is the definition? What is your working definition?
Yeah.
What is your other definition? What are you actually saying? What does it mean? It means nothing as it is now.
But we know what it means.
It means that if you like Putin and Trump, then you are extremist.
It means you're bad. Let's be honest. That's what it means, because that's how the vernacular of these terms have been used in the mainstream media after what, 2016, after the election and all that kind of stuff, right? It's been a ramping up of the use of that terminology, association to bad things and bad people kind of thing. So
it has a legal implication. There are people that are reported to police really for being extreme right, and they associate extreme right with Nazism. But Nazism means National Socialism. National Socialism is a leftist ideology. So you cannot say that something is right and at the same time is leftist. It's either one or the other. So you cannot put together extreme right and Nazism as one group, because one is right ideology, conservative ideology, and the other ideology is leftist socialist ideology. But they somehow want to conflate it by using the words next to each other adjacently. And as they repeat these adjacent references to these terms, people start thinking, oh, well, then alt-right means Nazi. Okay, but when I ask my friends, but do you realize that Nazi means National Socialism, so that's leftist? So it cannot be right, you know. Left is not right.
Well, you know, frankly, they have been all these terms and the purpose of using them in this way have just made them totally deflated and kind of lost all meaning, really. But the end result, what we can take away from it, is that it's just as much mud flinging in your direction as possible. That's what it's about. It's about to drag your name through the mud in whatever way they can, and by using these kinds of terms. But again, and also this idea, urge her to stop linking to the GU, the Gothenburg University. Like, as you said, there was nowhere in your post or where you highlighted things that you linked to the university page, right?
No.
It was like, this
no.
is just your profile page that you have, you know, linked on your Twitter or whatever. But it's very, I mean, it's kind of, right?
I have a CV.
Wordplay.
I had only, the only thing that I had written there is the book that I published in 2015. It's called Emotion in Group Decision and Negotiation. And I'm proud of my work, and why shouldn't I be proud of the fruit of my efforts and research?
Sure,
so I had published that, I'm the author, and it's actually an edited work, but I also am an author in this book. And that's the only thing that I had mentioned on my private Twitter account. And then you could also see my CV. You can see my CV even if you just write my name and see my face, you will see my CV, even if it's not on Twitter. I have the same picture there, because I don't have too many pictures of myself, and that's a particularly special picture for me. I've told this to other media. This is Haifa, and I went for a conference there on pragmatics as a beginning PhD student before I wrote my thesis, so some time ago. And I was there in this beach in the evening, and they said that you can actually see turtles there. So I had gone all the way to a very long beach, and then there was a cafe there. And but I had, in this excitement to see the turtles, I had forgotten my sandals on the beach. So I had walked all the way back towards the hotel where I was, away from the beach. And then I realized, oh, I'm walking without sandals. So I had to walk back to the place where the turtles were, next to the, not far away was the cafe. And then all of a sudden I see the girl who was working in this cafe was, the clients were gone, and there were just six men that were had trashed her on the ground and were about to rape her. They had opened they had opened to see if she has money there, and they had trashed her on the ground. She was really in a very precarious situation, completely alone on this abandoned beach, and at very late at night. So when I came there, they got scared. And then I started screaming, and then another person, I don't know, someone was passing the roads not far away, and then and they called the police. The police came and got them. So this girl was, I was about to just go, you know, with my sandals in my hands, and we had waited there, police and everything, and already became morning, and was pretty tired. And then she said, "Can I take a picture of you because you saved my life?" So I thought, this is a good picture. It's a good thing to use while my topic on Twitter is to raise awareness of the suffering gang rapists.
It's a good photo. Now, of course, let's continue here the story. I know we don't want to take up too much of your time here as well, and we appreciate though the that you're in depth with us and going through this from the beginning. Now we are going to get to what happened, of course, most recently here. What is it? Just about a week ago now, and the harassment by the police. You were flying first out of Sweden, then back in again, and you were completely, as I said in the opening, you were run through the ringer. You were harassed by the Swedish police. Is there anything else you want to say about Kajsa Kline, the organization? You sent me some other screenshots of, what was it, Open Democracy, was it, or...?
I mean, when I wanted to find out who is the person who is slandering me like this to my colleagues and writing all these letters and causing such incredible damage to my life, to my life work. It's my life work. I wanted to find out who she was, and then I looked at, she has actually published articles in Open Democracy. And I read the articles. I don't think that's anybody should can sue me for reading and the articles. And
hopefully not. No,
which they're trying to do apparently now. And so I found out that she has ideas about the world without any governments and without countries in these articles, and that she has started an organization in the United States, in New York, in 2003, where she gathered money from non-American citizens to influence the election of 2004. And she wanted to give this money to MoveOn.org. It's a leftist organization. So we are talking about a person who is more extreme than MoveOn.org.
Oops. That says quite a bit right there.
You can read it there. And she said, why shouldn't we, as world citizens, have the right to give our money to a good cause? When we first launched our campaign in fall 2003, we used the internet to direct small contributions from non-Americans to MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org felt they had to refuse our money for our interference in your election. We have been accused of breaking the law. So, I mean, look at what's going on with Trump now. Trump, both as a Donald Trump, as a presidential candidate and as a president, is investigated for years for soliciting funding for his campaign from foreign countries.
Yep.
These people have actually collected from thousands of people money for non-Americans to influence the election in the United States, trying to say that there is no, the Americans have no right over their own country. Anybody, anywhere, people from Turkey can vote. What will happen with the Americans in America, people from Afghanistan, people from Israel, anybody can vote, and Swedes should have influence on Americans' will on over how they want to regulate and organize their community. This is illegal. I mean, it's it is a criminal offense. There are people that have been imprisoned for such a thing, and you can see that Donald Trump is about to be impeached. So he's not going to be impeached, I believe.
No, but, I don't believe so either. But nonetheless, the circus has been going since 2016. You know, it's three years now of just like running around in circles, and then, you know, Russia, Russia, Russia. Now it's Ukraine, Ukraine, Ukraine. Yeah, I mean, it just goes on and on. And where is the proof? Where is the details about this? And it's just all circumstantial. It's wordplay. It's allegedly or supposed, you know, like if you actually analyze like the terms that they use when they talk about this stuff, you realize you can't actually pinpoint and get to the source of these things. But that's the point of it, obviously.
I sympathize with people who do not feel that they belong to any community. I understand, you know, as I can understand just about anybody. I would say that I understand that some people don't feel that they belong to any community, so they want that nobody should feel that they belong to any community.
Yeah, we got to wreck it for everyone else just because we are in a situation, then everyone else has to be in our situation. Yeah, that's not selfish at all.
for the sake of the argument, not argue, not condemn it or judge it, but just understand it. If you feel that way, should I also feel that way? And if I feel that I want to have a community, and so you are a cosmopolitan and I'm a nationalist, you want me to become like you. But if I, as a nationalist, want you to become like me, then that's hate crime.
That's wrong. Yeah, absolutely.
You see?
Yeah.
So
you're immoral.
Right. So that why should that be immoral? I am opposing this not only because there is no openness to otherness. There is no giving chance to others to feel differently than you, which is the basis of all communication. Communication is impossible if we think that we are just replicating the other. You know, I'm looking at you and you should be just like me.
Yeah.
No, the interesting part in communication is because we are different. And that's the interesting part. You have a different sensation. You have a sense of community. You know that you are, let's say, only Swedish or only American or only Danish. And I don't feel that way. Then, we're different. We're different. But that doesn't mean that you should impose yourself on me. You know, you cannot impose that on me. And if I have a community and if I have this this country, then my culture, that's part of me. You cannot deny that as part of me.
No, that's an act of aggression, ultimately, to impose a way of life on someone else or to say that they can't have something. It's obviously very obvious, but it's good to remind people about those things, that it's a hostile act and it's an act of intolerance, ultimately.
I don't mind that someone feels cosmopolitan, but I also
they can do that. That's fine. Of course, absolutely. No, absolutely. That's right. So she wrote this article about the Bush John Kerry election 2004, skull and bones election, that people call it.
So what they're trying to do there is to make them Swedes to influence the American election.
Right. Wow.
It is violation of the Constitution of the United States. It basically shows that they haven't read the Constitution. That's all.
And again, they actually raised money. They actually like went ahead and doing it. We got to remind people too. The girl that was now arrested, remember? And what was her name? And she admitted to it because she wanted to be released from jail. The Russian, I forget her name now. Do you know who I'm talking about? She was actually arrested.
No.
She was interested in weapons. She was meeting with NRA people and some Republicans, like I'll pull up her name here later, but she was, and what I'm saying is that she was arrested for these alleged crimes of trying to meddle in American politics, while there was, again, very difficult to actually pinpoint proof on her and stuff. Here you have an organization that actually is raising money and getting involved, and nothing happens, right?
Yeah, and that, I don't know if nothing happens, because we don't know if they were not actually somehow sanctioned. Did they get, were they police reported? Was the FBI on them? Are they allowed to go back to the United States? We don't know that, because, of course, this is hushed, and there is no information. But I'm interested to find out, actually, if there were consequences and what were the consequences. Because afterwards, she came to Sweden, and then she started campaigning in Sweden for Sweden to influence the elections there, or to kind of connect to the elections in the United States.
But
you have to understand that the community has its own rules and regulations, and one has to respect these rules and regulations. And the American people have the right to regulate their own community. You can't just impose it that way. It is an interesting discussion per se, but I don't understand why should I be police reported for being interested in this matter, or trying to understand how this journalist is reasoning, or how these people are at all reasoning. Particularly because they are very seriously damaged my life. What I want to mention, Maria Putin.
You remember? I forgot her name for a moment, but that, I mean, that was a whole, there was a circus, but unfortunately they got her to a plea deal. She did agree is not the right term, I'll look for another term, but she did concede, or whatever you want to call it, admitted to these things, and I think that was primarily to be released from prison. I mean, we don't even know what happened to her in there. I've heard her attorney speak a couple of times and said that this was totally, like, they were treating her bad and stuff, and so she just said, okay, fine, I'll admit it, because I would just want to get this over with and go home, kind of thing. But that made them get a little point in their scorebook, if you will, and say, see, there was Russians here, and they were meddling, and they were doing things, so it was very effective of them. But anyway, back to your story here.
Yeah, anyway, this is in Swedish, so the English speakers won't understand it. These are the articles, you can read them. It's open, it's called Free Thinking of the World. I mean, I don't understand how could it be free thinking to write such letters to a department and to remove and cancel my work.
Orange man bad.
And then she's actually accusing the Swedish people for not voting to join the euro, because Sweden voted to not join the euro and to be cautious to it, and she's accusing them for being parochial, to be limited, you know, in their thinking, which is okay. It's her view. It is offensive, actually, to the Swedish community to call them parochial that way for their decision. Each one of us has the right to decide how our money are used and what kind of financial matters are going to be discussed in the community. So if they decide to discuss it and decide that they're not going to join the euro, that's the community's decision. That's the community's will, and one has to respect the other person's will, other people's will, without calling them necessarily parochial. They're careful with how, if they would join the euro or not. So what happens next is when I got all these documents, I was curious, because I wanted to know if I'm actually I wanted to know what I'm police reported for, because this you are seeing here only few letters. We're talking about hundreds of pages of letters that she has sent around and corresponded with the university. She has asked the university to politically monitor my name as a private person. So they start monitoring my name all over the internet, all over the world, the Stockholm University. I'm a private person. At that time, they have already removed me. So why, and on Twitter, I'm a private person, and anywhere else, I'm a private person. So why are they, sort of state organization, monitoring me as a private person? What kind of rights do they have to do that? And what kind of rights does Jag Är Här, or this operative of the Jag Är Här, have the right to require it from state university to do such a thing.
Yeah.
And they start sending this information all over the internet, on Facebook, in different media regulated by the university, informing people about me. Yeah, about that I am an alt-right extremist, and that just slandering me by sending it everywhere, nationally in Sweden, in many different media used in the by the university. So I went to the police. I actually took a walk to the police, just took a walk to from where I lived, and I took the documents, you know, with me, and I mm-hmm. said, I would like to know what am I police reported for.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I think it was March 2018. I just took a walk, and I showed them the papers, these documents, and I said, I'm here. This person says that I'm police reported for something, but I don't understand what it is. Am I reported for liking Putin? Am I reported for liking Trump? Am I reported for being a Nazi? Am I reported for being alt-right or extreme right? Could you please let me know? And are any of this an offense in Sweden? So I actually stated that question in the police station. They looked at the papers and they said, well, give us your ID. I gave them the ID and they checked my police record. And it appears that nobody has ever reported me for anything ever in my life. This means that the letters that had been sent by the Jagerherr organization through their operative have been false. They have, she has claimed that I'm police reported in order to scare my colleagues and to disassociate me from them and them from me, to like disrupt our relation and our communication and my career. So the career assassination is happening based on a lie that I'm police reported, where I'm not police reported at that point. So I thought, okay, well, is this legal in Sweden? I mean, can you really do this? Isn't that a crime? Isn't that defamation? And they said, yes, but this kind of cases are not prioritized in Sweden.
Well, so, they do have quite a bit of other things to deal with, sadly, but yeah.
Yeah. No, but the policeman, there was a text over the station there where I talked to them, and it said that you should always be free to report, you know.
Oh,
and
no, that's fine. No, you can report all you want to. The officers are there to do the paperwork, but no one ever does anything about anything.
No, it's not even that. He actually refused to take the report. He said,
interesting. Wow.
You cannot report it now. And I said, yeah, I can just write down, you know, I have all the papers with me, the evidence with me. He said, no, I'm not taking this now. We're not taking it because 99% of these cases of defamation or slander are thrown in the garbage by the prosecutors.
Yeah.
And so there's no point to report it. I advise you to go and contact your union, he said.
Mm.
So I thought, oh, well, maybe in Sweden they're dealing it in the unions. For me, this is a crime, but, you know, I have no, my relations are destroyed. I have no project. I can't get a project. But, okay, I could probably talk to the union. And he refused, I don't know how else to report, you know. I just went physically with my person.
Sure.
And,
yeah, of course.
So I was not allowed to report. He refused to take my report, which is basically a violation of the of the law.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided to I just thought incredible that you could destroy a person so easily within hours. A person's work, you know, and life with a lie, basically. And then a newspaper wrote about it. They published an article, and this is we are talking about March 2018. So I continued my life, and I just dropped the whole thing. I thought, okay, I try to find a way to get out of this, or you know, I have book contracts outside of Sweden, and so I continued to live my life under the circumstances as good as I could. So then I went on vacation about a week ago. When I was leaving the country, Sweden, my passport was held. So we're talking about, this is March 2018, now it is October 2019, and my passport is taken by the passport control. I cannot I cannot leave the country.
You have a Swedish passport, yeah?
I have a Swedish passport.
Yeah, okay.
They're keeping my passport. My partner was there. Everybody else passed, you know? And it was this kind of all-inclusive trip. You know, we haven't done it before. It was our first time, and we decided, okay, we do that now. We need to rest. And so everybody else from the group went, and only I stayed there. And they told me I should stay there and wait. So I waited a little bit. Then I went forward and I asked, "What is it about? Why are you holding my passport?"
I'm gonna miss my plane, right?
No, but they didn't explain and kind of screamed at me and get out of here, stop asking questions, get out of here, just stay mm-hmm. there and wait. Mm-hmm. So I waited and I went and talked to the. I went to the gate and I explained to them, okay, I can't leave. They're keeping my passport. I don't know. We have prepaid everything. And they said, well, we can call them, find out. They talked to them. Well, you have to go downstairs and wait, and we will keep the plane if necessary a mm-hmm. little bit, mm-hmm. see what you can do. But then my partner was like, okay, then I can't go on vacation. And I said, no, you go on vacation. And I can't, no, we can't. So we were sitting there in this strange situation. And all of a sudden the policeman woman comes out and gives me my passport. Without explanation. Just go, because we were really the last there waiting for us, mm-hmm. you know. And so we ran out and we could fly. And so we went on our vacation, but I was wondering, what could that be? Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine that it is something related to this yoga hat or this this hunting organization, these hunters that are hunting humans.
Wrong things. Yep.
Yeah, because I feel hunted by all these letters, of course. And but it was already 1 year past, and I had just kind of forgotten about it, and I've even removed a lot of things from the site. There are many people that write in my site, not only I, on my Twitter account. I'm not the only one, because okay. I can't maintain it. So I ask people to like keep it alive. Mm-hmm. When I write, I have no time to keep up the Twitter so other people can write also. But anyway, on the way back, again, we are at the passport control, and I'm giving my passport to enter Sweden. We have arrived from vacation. We have very light clothes, you know, because we're in a warm place. And then all of a sudden they take my passport and say, well, you have to wait. Okay, I wait. I ask again what it is about. So they say, well, you should wait. Then two policemen, armed policemen, come.
Is this Arlanda, Stockholm, main airport?
Arlanda, Stockholm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Main airport in Stockholm. Then two policemen come. Then one more woman comes. My partner was recording them. He started to record them because we contacted a lawyer that someone recommended to us. And very quickly, you know, like, where lawyer, what's going on? And then I started thinking, well, I have no idea what this is about. It's very strange. It's a very, very severe measure to stop someone in the airport. It's very public because we have met people there and they see that I can't pass. You know, it's embarrassing. It's horrible. And am I some kind of a criminal? And so the two policemen come and then one more policeman comes and they say, remove this recording that he was making. He should remove it. You're not allowed to record here. Okay. He has to erase all the recording because he wants to record how they're talking to us. And they were not pleasant and they were not nice. They were rough and, uncivilized in my view, because when I asked, can we get a lawyer? And one of the policemen said, I don't have a lawyer in my pocket for you. I thought this was extremely offensive to say. I mean, this is my very basic right to have at least a lawyer, to understand why they're keeping my documents and why are they keeping me alive. So I'm very disappointed by this person. So these three armed policemen around us, and they say, stay here, wait, we are going to confer and think what we're going to do. The next moment we see, we contacted the lawyer. He answered. He's on the phone with my partner. He's saying, whatever happens, don't talk. You know, because if you have no lawyer, don't talk.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk, but we don't know what it is about, but we're not going to talk. Then all of a sudden a bus comes, a police bus, arrives. And, at least three policemen, came out, from the bus, armed policemen. And then a car, police car behind them, of two more policemen arrives. So by now I'm counting, three there. So eight policemen plus the two policemen that were at the passport control. So now all together there are 10, and we are standing, we are sitting there in this bench where we're told to sit, and they stand around us and they say, well, we are detaining her, or arresting her. I'm not sure what word they used because we didn't record them, but we are taking her in and for an interrogation. Then I'm thinking, okay, if you're going to call me for interrogation, wouldn't you serve me first the papers? Like, shouldn't they just serve me a paper that calls me for an interrogation?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they just, they haven't served me a paper. Like, they are not telling me what I'm supposed to, what am I accused of a crime? What's going on? And they don't explain anything. Then the lawyer says on the phone, you have to, you have the right to have a witness with you. And so my partner says, I am coming as a witness. She has a right and I want to be a witness. In this moment, they tear me from him. They just take me away from him, take me from one tent, here, one policeman, another armed policeman on the other hand, and just drag me out of the airport, with my bags, you know, around me. And they leave him there. I don't know what's happening with him. He's surrounded by the other armed policeman. I am taken with the armed policeman out of the airport. Then all of a sudden they ask me to just stand like Christ on a cross, and they're going to now search me. And they start touching me all over the body, and I've never been touched in such disgusting manner with another completely unknown to me being, no matter if it's a uniform or non-uniform, I'm a free and innocent person. They're touching me as they like, as if I am, like, as if my body is not alive, as if I don't feel anything. Of course I have to cooperate because I noticed that once they tore me from my friend, this is because I said, I want a witness. So we were like holding each other and I want the witness. They just tear me apart, which means that they can use violence anytime for anything if they think that this is a resistance. They can call it resistance and then it gets even worse, you know.
Yeah, it escalates quickly, so.
Yeah, so anyway, I am put into this, I'm searched and touched all over and very unpleasantly and very intimately and roughly. And then I am pushed into a car, and then I have to sit on some kind of a strange seat that, of hard plastic, and then I'm told that I cannot put the belt on my own, that they have to put the belt, so one is holding on one side, the other one is holding on the other side, they come from both sides, they put the belt, my hands are under the belt, they take out my hands, they take my, throw my bag in the front seat, the other bag in the back seat, one of the policemen sits next to me, the other one starts driving, I don't know if they put the
Sirens on or something?
I didn't hear any sirens, and I don't know if they're supposed to do it or not. Might be that maybe they're supposed to. I don't know if they did it. Total chaos. I'm looking at my friend. What is going to happen to him? What are going to do to him? They start driving. One of them is asking me questions. He starts, they start driving super fast with the bus. So there is a bus with policemen that is driving, escorting me out of the airport. And then there is this car in which I'm seated with the other armed policeman. And they start driving somewhere. I have no idea where they're driving. They start interrogating me in the car. One of them starts asking me questions. Like, to be honest with you, I can't even recall all the questions, but I'm silent. You know, I've been told to be silent. So I'm silent. And I stand there and I look out and I'm just silent. I even close my eyes, you know, just, okay, there is no point for me to do anything. These people have zero respect for my rights, even for my body, you know. And I just need to survive somehow, and I don't know where they're taking me. And to be honest with you, I don't even know who they are. As I said a number of times.
Were you afraid, like, at that point? Like, what is this?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. I was so scared. I had no idea what they're doing. This is such an extreme measure to hold me like this and to push me and to search me in the public place, other people around, even in front of my partner. Why? I mean, isn't that hurting him as well?
Yeah, of course.
And we don't know why. We have no clue. And then this one policeman starts interrogating me in the car, and I'm not saying anything. He's like, do you want a lawyer? I don't say anything because I'm thinking this is some random policeman. He has no idea who I am, what it is about. He's just intimidating me.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling me, "Har du tappat helt, Biljana? Har du tappat helt? Or have you lost it, Biljana? Have you lost it?" As if he is my friend, as if we know each other.
So he knows. Yeah, they know your name. The people that they're in the back with you, they know your name. They know who you are.
They hold my passport. That's
right.
All they know. They don't know who I am. They just know passport.
Interesting.
And so he starts. He takes the passport and he talks on the phone. He talks in a private phone with his friends. And laughs, have fun, hell it, you know, laughing. You have just detained a person and she doesn't know why. You have left another person and he doesn't know what's going on. 10 policemen have been around us. They're all armed and he's sitting and laughing with his friends. Just as a person, I think this is very strange. Like, it's completely inhumane and very uncivilized in my terms of life. And then he takes another phone, then he checks my passport. I don't know where he's sending the data of my passport. And he says, oh, this is, I don't know what number he said, but 19A or some kind of codes. I don't understand what it is, but there's very serious issues. And he takes my passport and throws it on the front seat, throwing it. She's the master of my life. And then they drive 157 is the highest I could see on a speedometer. I was scared because they were driving so fast, and I've never, like, this crazy speed for me, and you don't have the speeds in Sweden, so I was scared for my life. I thought, imagine if they crash, then I am dead. You know, it doesn't really matter if they have the right, if they violate something, it doesn't matter. They're just going to kill me here, you know, and I am a mother, I have a son, I have a family of friends, and it was just awful. You know, you're sitting there and you're completely powerless in the hands of these people that are so recklessly treating me. So I just thought I have to survive this drive. And then we somehow, after a very long drive, I thought we were actually driving to Gothenburg. Because I am...
For those who don't know, that's a five-hour car ride.
Six-hour drive, yeah. And they were driving so fast that I thought it's so long.
You'll be there in three, it's fine.
It happens. I could be there in three, I guess.
Right.
So anyway, we arrive at certain point at some kind of garage, and again, I cannot get out of the car myself. They have to, one on one side, the other on the other side, they have to unlock the seat. I thought, they're treating me as a terrorist. Like, who do you treat this way? What kind of criminal do I have to be? And what are they accusing me for that it's so violent? Like, am I Breivik or something? And it was just anyway, we go out, they take my bags and put them down on the ground, tell me to sit some bench, and they trying to intimidate me. Oh, har du tappat det helt, vill du ha en advokat om du inte säger någonting, så antar jag att du vill ha en att du vill ta vilken som helst advokat. And I'm not saying anything because
have you lost it, if you don't do you want an attorney, if you're not saying anything, we're going to kind of appoint one for you, right? That's what they said.
That's what they said, but yeah. I, you know, he's not my interrogator. He's the person who is detaining me or arresting
me. He's the intimidator.
He's the intimidator. So he has no right to start an interrogation in the car, and he has nothing to do with that. So I've already asked for a lawyer, and they've already told me that they don't have a lawyer in their pockets. So now they are they're trying to make me talk or say something. But the lawyer had told me I should be silent. So I'm silent.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really
good.
Silent. Yeah. So I sit there for 3 hours. policemen are passing by, armed policemen in and out and in and out. I sat down with my hands on my knees, with my mouth totally dry. I didn't go to the toilet. I even closed my eyes. I just stood there for 3 hours and I had no idea what's going on. Some policemen were playing some games. I could hear that there were some room and they were playing some games with cars. So I thought, some kind of sense of normality, you know, the policemen are sitting and playing games, during work. Okay.
Oh, computer games or?
Yes, there's some in a sense, this kind of calmed me a little bit because I felt like, okay,
wow.
Something, but because otherwise it's just, armed uniformed people walking around and this scares the hell out of me, you know. I don't have any arms. They are all armed and they can do whatever they want with me. Then I felt one of them was so intimidating, the one that was in the car, that I actually thought, can you imagine if this person actually rapes me and they can cover up everything.
Right.
And I will never be able to prove it because I have no witness.
Yep.
And they can do anything to me. And the smallest little resistance I would do, they would charge me for that. And they would use violence for anything because they have the right to use violence on me. So I had to find a posture in which they would feel that they're in control of me and I'm not, you know, I'm not challenging their control. That's what I thought. I had to like show them with my body posture like a dog that I'm not challenging the master. And I did it for my own personal security. And I did it. You know, I stood there quietly with my hands on my knees, and I didn't move for all these hours. The only thing I did was to look at my clock a little bit, just to see what time is it. And
you still don't know where you are. No one had told you what.
No, I have no idea where I am. I don't know why I'm detained or arrested. Mm. And I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to interrogate me. For what are they going to do? What crime have I committed? Nothing. I know nothing. So at one point around, and now it's the next day, it's past 12 and past midnight.
Midnight,
and two,
yeah.
New men arrive and they say, we are going to interrogate you now. And they try again to communicate with me. I'm quiet. And then they say, well, there is a decision by the prosecutor. Not always you need to take a DNA sample from someone, but from a suspect. But in your case, the prosecutor has given an order that we should take a DNA test and register your DNA. I was totally,
really?
This is the moment in which to this day at night, I'm thinking of this moment. It's been hard to sleep. Taking my DNA. I mean, what does that actually mean?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of crime should I have committed so that they would take how could my DNA resolve a crime? I mean, they don't take the DNA of so many rapists, you know. The rapists are going without taking the DNA.
Yeah.
People are coming, criminals are coming from other countries. They're not taking the DNA when they enter the country. So that they, without passports, without documents, they don't have any ID for them. They don't take their DNA.
Exactly.
So they take my DNA.
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah.
And so I was really shocked by this. And I knew that if I resist it, and if I say something that I don't want it or so on, they will force me. Because they had already forced me when I wanted to have a witness, which is my right.
Yep.
And they forced me when I have a right and refused to grant me that right. So now, even if I have a right to refuse the DNA test, not DNA test, but the DNA sampling, even if I have a right, they can still force me. And if I don't have a right, then it will be considered resistance to the decision of this prosecutor. So they would use violence. So in order to avoid violence, further violence on my person and my body, I just did nothing. I didn't say anything. I just walked in, whatever they told me to walk in, and I went into this room where they put me to sit down again on another bench. They are in front of me, two men on a table, and one of them came and gave me, stuck a stick into my mouth, and started scrubbing things inside my mouth, around my teeth and my cheeks inside. And, my mouth like this, like literally in my mouth.
Mm.
And that was the DNA sampling. He said that he's going to keep this DNA in their crime registry. And if I'm not convicted for the crime that I'm accused of, which I still don't know what it is,
right,
then they're going to destroy it or remove it. If I'm not accused, if I'm accused, they will keep it. If you're not accused, if I'm found guilty, then they're going to keep it in their criminal records forever and whatever. I don't know how long. And if I am not, then they will throw it.
Right. Right. Right.
So now just imagine the situation. I'm completely, after every day, I'm trying to survive this this career assassination and for years. And I've started to kind of live a normal life and even dare to go on vacation. And then they have, like, searched my body. They have trashed my body around the town. They have been driving me recklessly and threatening my life with this reckless driving. They have been tearing me apart from my partner. They've refused to give me a witness. They have mocked me when I ask for a lawyer. They've intimidated me that I have lost it because I didn't talk. And apparently she's so scared. Laughing at me, mocking me. And then they actually get into my mouth. You know, they start actually picking my mouth, inside my mouth. I consider this übergriff.
It's all this is a violation for sure.
Yes. Yep. This condition of mine, I was so shocked by this. It feels like rape for me. They're raping my being, my person. No consent, you know, I haven't given consent to any of this, and I'm not allowed to give consent. So this is very similar to how rape victims feel. They have no control over their offender, or they have no control over their own bodies, and I have no control over my body. I have no control over the inside of my mouth. I have never been treated that way in my life. And then they start reading. Finally, they sit down and read why I'm there. And they say, you're here. And I'm expecting that I'm accused of, I don't know what, exploding a building or something.
Terrorism or something.
Terrorism. And then they say, you're here on the suspicion that you have defamed Kaiser Klein on Twitter and caused her to feel molested or distressed.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. When I heard this, I actually was like, am I hearing correctly?
Wow, this woman has tremendous power over Swedish police force and judicial system.
Just beyond imagination. This same person,
Twitter crime, folks,
all these letters and has removed me from university. I cannot get a project. I wrote project after project. No one wants to give me a ride because I have no association with university. I can't get it. I cannot practice what I've studied, what I've paid for. This is career assassination. It's a very, very serious issue. And I'm still living, you know, I'm still alive, I still have my friends, so okay, maybe it's over with my career, maybe I should write other things, I write the books that I already had contracts with. Trying to overcome the whole thing, you know, not sleeping, feeling bad for such a long time, and all of a sudden I'm there listening that they refuse to take my report for her defamation, which is defamation, to say to my colleagues that I have, and that I'm reported to police without being reported to the police. It was just unbelievable.
Wow.
I cannot take this organization called police and prosecution state seriously. If defamation is a very serious crime, they are not telling me what tweets this is about. I cannot answer to how can I know what tweets it is about? There are thousands of tweets. Are they mine? Whose tweets are they? Do they know? How, and so on. Nothing. There's no more information. That's all it is about. And also notice the way it is formulated. It's one sentence. You're suspected of defaming Foucault, Mut, Kaiser Klein, på Twitter, som orsakar hennes ofrid, att hon känner ofrid eller någonting sånt.
Defame on Twitter to cause her kind of a, yeah, I guess, feel a violation distress. Of freedom or, yeah, distress. Or
no, this ofrid means molestation, I think.
Is it okay?
Like a legal term,
okay, interesting.
Yes, so what kind of tweet does it have to be so that you can feel, so that you're ofredande, you know, ofredande. And these are, now we're talking about two different crimes. One is Foucault. I think it's 2 years prison. And ofredande is 1 year prison maximum.
Yeah, what's the English term for tall?
No, defamation.
Is it defamation? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The slander, defamation.
Slander, yeah.
Libel.
I was going to say, exactly, libel. That's the word I was looking for, yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I have never been in a criminal situation in my life.
I know these terms.
All I noticed is
in the new Sweden, you got to know these terms, you know.
In the new Sweden, you have to know a lot of law, but it doesn't really help because they
do
whatever.
It doesn't apply. Exactly. That's just, it's anarcho-tyranny. It's actually lawlessness.
In my experience, this is lawless, that I'm not even allowed to have a witness. And anyway, or then they asked me if I want a lawyer, and that's the only thing I answered. I said the name of the lawyer, and I said, I want this lawyer to be my legal representative. So I thought they would bring the lawyer before starting the interrogation, which they didn't.
Right.
There was no lawyer. They continued the interrogation. They asked me just 2-3 questions if I reject the accusations or what? Yeah, this kind of like basic questions, and I didn't answer anything, of course. Mm-hmm. And then they suddenly stopped, and they noticed that they're accusing me of 2 different things here in one sentence. This if they are put in one police report, you cannot in one police report have both defamation for 2 years prison and ofredande or molestation for 1 year prison. These are 2 different. This should be 2 different crimes and should be treated as different crimes. So to this day, as I'm speaking to you, I don't know what I'm accused for. That is, am I facing 3 years prison, or am I facing 2 years prison, or am I facing 1 year prison? I don't know that, because it is so badly formulated that is uninformative. You know, it leaves me in this state of constant worry. Oh, okay, I'm going to prison for 3 years or 2 years or 1 year. This is the state in which they leave me, you know. And without any further explanation. So then, then they take me out and they say that I should wait for the decision of the prosecutor. And then after a while, they came out and they told me that I am free to go now. They release me. But they're going, they have an order from the prosecutor to take my, to search, to take my computer and my phone. Then I opened my mouth, once again.
Now, to clarify, you had a laptop with you on the trip? Is that what they're talking about?
I had bags, and he just comes and says, I have orders by the prosecutor to take your computer and your phone.
But you had that with you, or were they talking about your computer at home?
He said, the computer and my phone and my things that are there.
Okay.
And I said, I don't have a computer and a phone. He said, how could you go on vacation without a phone? I didn't answer to that question. What he did, however, he didn't find a computer and a phone, but he searched everything. My entire personal bag, and my back from vacation with my clothes and stuff and some books. I don't know what they were searching for. It felt more like snooping, because they were looking for a computer. Computer at least should be like this, but they were just going through each one of my clothes. Now, that's not just looking for a computer and a phone. They're actually doing a house search, so to say. I don't know what it's called. I really don't know the criminal terms. And then I asked to take my bags because I don't see very well without glasses or lenses, and I have been deprived of my bags, so I couldn't see actually much. I couldn't even see so far as to see what the clock is or where they're driving me. So I really felt a little bit kind of lost without seeing, and I wanted to get my bags. And I also had jewelry inside my bag. Some jewelry I had on me as I was traveling, but some I had in the bag. So I was worried because I had left it. It was not under my control for a while, so I wanted to see if it's still there. And then he said, why do you need, so I worried that my jewelry is not there. And he said, why do you need more jewelry? You have enough on you. Then I said, well, I have no phone, so can I use a phone and call someone? Because I don't know where I am, and it's 1 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I don't know how to get out of here and where, I'm totally alone, and I have these clothes from summer clothes. And then he said, no, you can't call from here, but you can go out, and I will show you. You go out, and you just few step meters away, you can call from the reception of the police. And so he opened some kind of doors outside as we walked through the garage and outside, and under the rain. It was raining, it was very dark, and I had really no idea where I am. And then he said, Likatin, good luck with
good
you.
Good luck. You have the start. Yeah, all right. Luck. Take care now. Bye bye. Right.
Exactly, friendly. Because yeah. I went to the reception where I actually thought he meant it. He told me that I could call from the reception because I have nowhere to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. I didn't even have my I had some money with me, but I didn't have the cards with me in my bag. My friend had my cards. And so I go to the reception, and the reception says it's open only until 8 o'clock. So he actually mocked me when he told me good luck, and he mocked me when he lied to me when he told me that I can call from the reception, because I cannot call from the reception at 1 o'clock. So he refused to help me to get in touch with someone to pick me up or to help me to get out of there. Although they had driven me against my will for completely unknown reasons, for hours, and kept me there for 4 hours at least. It started at 9 and it ended at 1 o'clock. So, I was there at night and I was wondering where to go and what to do.
Yeah.
And, just thinking this is, how is this possible that this could be because of this person? And I don't even know what tweets it is about. And I'm
so
facing...
Clarify for me there. They left you with, what's the wording here, an official charge? Like, this is what you need to return, and this is an open criminal matter now? And you're being charged.
No, they didn't say that. They just said, no more information. I didn't get the number of the case. I didn't get a paper with the actual report for which I am arrested. I didn't get a copy of the, and nothing. I don't even know to this moment, I don't know the number of the case. At the police or anywhere else. And to this point, the lawyer is not appointed as my legal representative, despite the fact that I have the right to have a lawyer at the actual interrogation. So violation after violation of prescribed legal rights have been removed here. And not only this, they are actually mocking me. And even just as a human being, to help someone that maybe I'm a suspect. It doesn't mean that I have committed these crimes. Just because you have been into my mouth and taking my DNA does not deprive me of my humanity. I'm still a human being. I still need to get home. I still need to go to eat or to go to the toilet or whatever. Nothing. It's just indescribable what they did. And, this is the situation. Now, if we are not allowed to find out who is the person that has committed the crime against us, such as or have written this defamation letters, like this woman has written about me to the university, if I don't have a right to find out why and what and how, and even talk about it, what kind of rights do victims of rape have? They don't have rights either. They cannot discuss what they're exposed to. They cannot discuss what they have been subjected to, their suffering, and they cannot mention even the name of their perpetrator until this person is convicted. And most of them are not convicted. So this situation here, I feel. I feel violated by my co-citizens, and these violations are done using my tax money as well and my family's tax money. So I'm not allowed to work, and I'm not allowed to do research. I'm not allowed to practice my profession. Although I am a scholar, and I'm published, and I have an international name in certain subjects. I have been writing in encyclopedias.
Yep.
I am completely peaceful and known as such, and like extremely sort of known as analytical and very calmly thinking about things usually. But so There I am on the street, and this person now, her husband, I was informed by Katerina Yanush, who posted this on Twitter, that this person's, this Kaiser Klein has said, and her husband has said, that I'm persecuting her.
Yeah, I was just reading here these pages and some of the posts from Lars Ilse, is it Ilse Hammar, his name is?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know him.
And neither do I, but I'm realizing as I'm reading here that it's they who are the victims, not you. No, it's the people writing about the travesty, both around this case and other previous, of course, persecutions of people who have wrong opinions, according to these people and the Jag är här, I'm here movement. It's not, you know, they are the victims. Kajsa's the victim, not you.
Well, she. If she feels like a victim, she's a victim of her own actions, because I have not forced her to write defamation letters against me to my colleagues and say that she has police reported me in 2017 when she hasn't, and scare them so that they can remove my position. I have not forced her to do that. I don't know her. I have never written to her, never communicated with her. I didn't even know if she has a Twitter account.
Right.
And her husband has attacked me before on Twitter with a very unpleasant and sort of violent tone, and I just blocked him. So
right.
There's not much more to that. And if he continues to now they are calling me before they called me a Nazi because I retweeted the site about the game. Then they called me right extremist because Stockholm University has established that I like Putin and maybe Trump. Then they report me for something, for tweets and cause DNA sampling and my violent arrest. And now they are coming out with new accusations, and now they're accusing me of being an anti-Semite because of her name. I have no idea why her name would be associated with being an anti-Semite if I have mentioned her name. Why can't I name, for instance, Epstein? His name is also, if she wants to say that her name is Jewish, Epstein is also Jewish. I have used that name. I have used the word Einstein also. I have used also Swedish names, Svensson, Andersson. Does it mean that I am an anti-Christian or anti-Swedish? I have used, all kinds of names I have mentioned. And does it mean that you, for instance, if you mention my name in a critical manner, does it mean that you're an anti-Swede because I'm a Swedish citizen or anti-Christian because, let's say, I'm Christian? Not that I'm saying it, but like an example. I haven't read what he writes. I just read what people told me that he writes. I think it's completely irrelevant to me what he writes. And if he's defaming me in any possible way, I'm now informed how that works.
Now, give me, we're going to start winding down here in a little bit. It's very, very interesting hearing the story and just how absurd this is in the treatment, and it opened up. It obviously opens up more questions, more questions than I had beforehand. Frankly, in terms of how the police can be moved into this, treating you like this, targeting you like this, because of information essentially being shared, opinions and information being shared by you on Twitter. If you kind of just boil it down to its most simplest, it's simply because you drew attention to. To gang rapes, yes? Is that the issue? What is the issue, do you think?
Anybody who has followed my Twitter account knows that I talk about the gang rapes and everything that is related somehow to the gang rapes. So if we can solve the gang rapes, how can we solve the situation with the gang rapes? What can we do? I think that one way to solve it, to help at least the victims, is to show them that we are there and we care. And I'm there and I'm showing that I care. That's what I'm doing.
Right.
And if there is any political manner to resolve it, for instance, how did the decision to have a lot of alien men from Afghanistan stay in Sweden, 9,000 were they, and go to school, although they're over age, together with the Swedish children and teenagers. I don't think that was a good decision, given the statistics over the rape statistics. It doesn't mean that all aliens are capable of doing such crimes, but statistically, you have to be aware of it. So sure. If I had a say on this, I would have stopped this law, which allowed them to stay. And as you can see, there is a lot of suffering has been caused by this decision.
Absolutely, imported, manufactured things that never should have been, essentially, and the damage against these women, against their families, and the extension, as you say, it's horrendous. Yeah. And that then, consequently, when you're beginning to highlight this and talking about the solutions, what do we do, how do we fix this, what's the issue, then it's a complete reversal of the situation and a blame game where it's an attack on you as the messenger for what it is that we need to do to fix this. Obviously, like, we have a major issue in Sweden.
The borders are open. Sweden has opened the borders. They are releasing most of the rapists, the reported rapists.
Yeah.
And they are not deporting the convicted rapists. So most of the so what's happening is that they are actually spreading them in the European Union because the borders are open. So if I move to another country, let's say I get probably from the same group, you know, with anonymous names, they send me a lot of threats and insults. They call me all kinds of. The recent one was yesterday, where they use really vulgar language against me. Mm-hmm. Anti-Semite.
Yeah, they're very nice people. All of these guys. Yeah.
So if let's say they want me to get out of Sweden and so on, not that their opinion matters to me that much, but.
Right.
Let's say if someone wants to get away from this and not expose themselves here to this, where would they go? Huh? Yeah, in European Union, you can travel wherever they want, and you have no control. There are thousands and thousands of these people, so you are not protected, and Europe is not protected because of this policy here. Have in mind that, for instance, if you followed Spain, in Spain there was a gang rape in Spain when a girl was. Kind of young girl was raped, 23 years prison. In our case, in most of the cases, if you read the cases, they're getting months, maximum 1 year.
Yeah, and some cases, they just let go. Just let go.
And most of the cases, let go.
Yeah.
Most of the cases, even in gang rape.
Absurd. The basic, as I said before, the basic functions of civil society has collapsed in Sweden. And it seems that it's, you know, when I hear stories like yours here and thinking about the resources then that is available by the police if they wanted to do something about certain things, that means that it's a personification of anarcho-tyranny, which is essentially that there's total anarchy in the sense that no one is upholding the laws and the rules. Some people can do whatever they want. There's free leeway. They can criminal behavior. And then at the same time, there is a fierce, Stasi-like kind of organization and structure, including the police and the imitation of the law enforcement there, to attack and clamp down on specific people. It's selective. It's almost like, well, we're going to target you. We're going to target you. But overall, yes, my sense of it is that the contract between the citizens and the state,
yes,
is something, yes, which has been ripped up over,
yes,
the last decade or so, I'd say, in Sweden, where essentially there is the functions that we pay some of the highest taxes in the world for, by the way,
yes,
where we expect the state to do certain functions for us. They have failed us in that contract, and that's the situation we're in right now. We don't know. It's total lawlessness on one end. At other times, as I say, people can be targeted for the most absurd, outrageous. I've heard of not like this. This is more severe than that, but I've heard of things in the UK where the police is sitting around spending more time on Twitter than solving, for example, the knife epidemic that's happening in London and many other towns and cities as well. We know about, Rotherham and these places. There are examples where there was organized gangs that were intentionally pimping out, if you will, young British girls, English girls, and where the authorities and the local community there, the authorities there backed down for the fear of being called racist if they brought up these issues, right? And they allowed it to happen. And then the police actually goes after an old woman online that says, I'm not for open borders, I think this is wrong, and, you know, whatever innocuous, thing it might be. It's
yeah,
absurd. It's frightening, and
it's frightening.
It's clown world. I don't know how to process it.
It is
really
surprising us because we didn't expect it. That's what I think. I've been teaching in universities for so many years, and of course there are some basic conditions for understanding each other. Let's say, for instance, when I teach communication, what is communication? Everything that's happening now is against absolutely every idea or definition or theory on communication. Everything that you see is against it. Then another special thing to actually realize that it's never discussed. I've actually tweeted about this. Sometimes I tweet something that comes from science or from research. One particular thing to understand is that the larger the group and the population is, the smaller the possibility of the individual is to participate in discussion and decision taking. So the bigger the community is, the smaller the chances of the individual to participate in decision taking. And if you really actually believe in democracy, then you want to allow each individual to have influence on their own life, because their life is given by something else than the government. So they have a will or unwill. After 18, we have assumed that they have their own will, and they're that's why we care for their decisions. So when the group becomes too big, let's say you want the whole world is one, like whole world is one, and the people from Afghanistan are voting for people in Sweden, somewhere else, without knowing anything about it, being raised there.
Yeah, that worked out just great.
Yeah. This is like, you're creating a situation where, there is absolutely no chance for participation in decision taking. What you're offering here is a possibility for a selected, group that is going to, on very, top-down decision-oriented structure. Once you do that, then it becomes top-down. What is good for and is going to happen, the more educated and intelligent the population is, the more bottom up the structure will be,
yeah,
because people are informed and they read, they know constitution rights things, they can reason about life beyond their own person as well, so they can help each other in a better way and participate in the decision in intelligent way, understanding things, understanding the language and so on. So just in principle, for all these people who think that it's very good to have just no countries, no. What the human capacity for organizing themselves in groups means that we can participate only in optimal amount of participants.
That is, what is it? 180. I remember reading some of this research a while back. Like where things begin to crumble apart, where it ends being meaningful relationships is around 100, something like. It's impossible to keep track of it, and that's why this idea of globalization, or like, again, I mean, it's like, as you say, caring about issues halfway across the world, and to a certain extent, we're already suffering under this with the global media, where you kind of lose sight of what's happening in your local community, or you choose away focusing on that as opposed to reading about big stories from the rest of the part of the world.
Yes.
And it even affects your psychology in the sense that you're so overwhelmed with all the issues that you're reading about, the problems and the hardships, whatever it is, whatever you emotionally connect with and feel concerned about in other parts of the world, that it actually undermines you, like, operating in a decent way with your local environment. I mean, the research is there. People just thinking 5 minutes about it can figure this out. I mean, it's a pipe dream. It's what a child say. Well, can't we all just kind of get along? And it's like, well, sure, that's great. But it's like there's other ways we structure and organize society in order for that to take place and work. Right.
Yeah, the individuals need to be able to participate in decision taking because it influences their personal and their family's lives. So this is what we kind of want to have, and that's why there are countries, there are communities, and so on. If you have a much bigger structures, such as, for instance, as the European Union is shaping up now, you're seeing decision taking, that is, people don't even know. So we are supposed to vote for the European Union, but do you think that people know who they're voting for?
Too centralized.
How can you know someone else's representative from another country? None of these people are actually elected. None of them are actually elected, and they're still there influencing our lives.
That's right. They're selected, including, of course, the European Commission, which actually holds the majority of the power, not the parliament. So, you know.
Exactly. And the other principle is that Nethat Granskeren, the person who...
Like the internet hate researcher, or whatever you want to call that, translated.
This is a hate crime fighting organization, which is funded by our taxes.
That's right.
This person has employed, they have employed the same woman who has both reported me to my employers and then reported me to the police and so on. This same person has worked for them. And they are coming up, his argument there is that when he says there are a lot of, unfortunately, many of the people we report to the police for hate crime on Facebook or on Twitter or on social media and forums, they are victims of crime, he says. He actually said it in a tweet I read. And this means that he's aware that these people are suffering. And when they say something like, this is horrible, and call names, you know, to someone that has violated them, if they express that anger, then he interprets it as if you can suppress that expression of that anger, then you're not going to have a new Breivik. I would say, and I want to officially say that to the governing body in this country, that if you suppress the emotions of victims, then these emotions are just going to grow and change, and you're not giving them a chance to be communicated, to be rationalized, to be explained, to be experienced in this way, because otherwise they're not experienced. And then you will create a Breivik. You will create a Breivik when there is suppression of emotion, right? And
that's just extraordinary.
How do you consider emotion? Their
argument, the cruelty of that is just unbelievable.
It is cruel. It is cruel. Not only that you are exposing these people to violence through very responsible policies that people
it's more important than that. It's a cover up of the, as you say. If there are statistical facts where you know, in other words, you can do predictions, probability, right? Then to not equip then the target group that are the victim, right? Young girls, women, whatever, not to equip them with that understanding to help them along into try to prevent these things from happening further. It's a way of encouraging the crime. It's a way of saying, no, we're just going to look the other way. Because they see they've made that moral decision, right? Well, it's worse to give this information to people who don't like immigration because they are bad, right? Or open, they don't like open borders. They don't like being turned into minorities in their own countries. So to make sure that continues, that process continues, because that's good, we cover up as many things as we can, including crimes, including telling people, equipping our young girls. They're creating a world where the people in the European countries, we're talking about Sweden now specifically, but they're choosing their security, their well-being doesn't mean anything. The choices to import other people into our country to try to help them and save them or whatever the argument is here is trumping. The issue of taking care of our own people, right? That they're willing to turn our people into potential victims, both of terrorism, but also the specific, now we're talking about gang rapes and things like that. They're willing to take that hit and to turn them into victims just for manifesting a pipe dream, which is an ideology, a political idea.
I mean, they can very well have their ideologies, but they don't have to impose these ideologies.
But that's what they're doing right now. That's what's happening. Right? They're silencing people that are criticizing it.
Silencing critique against their policies is extremely sort of disturbing for themselves, because I think, this is how I think. Okay, they want to take this reckless, to great extent, decisions, knowing the effects of these decisions. Unfortunately, a lot of suffering will come out of this, a lot of suffering, but they carry responsibility for it. So they, sure, if they want to continue with policies that are creating suffering, then they can continue, but it's their responsibility. It's not our responsibility. I have said no to this.
Yeah, that's right.
This is not in my name. You are not allowing policies that result in sadistic rapes of women, children, and men in my name. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So they are responsible now. So they should not go out in the newspaper and Express and others and say, oh, we didn't understand this. We made a mistake. No. It's not we.
You've been consciously covering this up and now consciously made the decision to silence people and critics. Hey,
yes.
Biljana, I don't want to be too long-winded. We should wrap up in a little bit. It's been an amazing story just to hear about this, just jaw-dropping it's so absurd. I'm kind of a little bit of a loss at words to kind of categorize it and define it and stuff, but I think it's been very, very important to get this out there so people understand kind of the situation we're facing in Sweden too, and get people internationally to understand just how weird and repressive and also at the same time then how authoritarian the system there is, despite priding itself on being an open democracy with tolerance and all these kinds of things. But I would love to have you back. I must have you back here in the future, and you keep us updated on what happens and the case and whatever you're at that point able to speak about and things like that. Is the Twitter the best way for people to keep updated, the website, both? Where do people go to stay up to date here until we get you back on the show?
I don't have any other way of sort of communicating publicly, but just Twitter. I see it's like a newspaper that I'm reading from all possible languages. I love that I get different languages there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for inviting me and for having me.
Of course.
It was it's very difficult to talk about this story.
Yeah,
but I decided, and I don't know what they will do to me next. I really don't know. I don't know if
I know
they
that's
will...
what's so weird about this, frightening, frankly.
Yeah, I don't know. I go out on the street and I don't know if something
you have to be,
will happen
you have to
there.
Be, I mean, sadly, you have to be careful. This is what, you know, there are maybe other examples in history we can look at. But I mean, when you become an enemy of the state, which I guess is kind of by proxy through Kajsa Klein and that organization that has ultimately put pressure on the law enforcement in Sweden, where they are willing to go out and potentially even. Well, I mean, I would assume that some of the things that happened there are against the law. They're not actually in their power to do the kind of things that they did to you. They do it nonetheless, of course. But that's a very interesting dynamic. So all I'm saying is be careful, because
thank you.
This is unhinged, and it's very bizarre and strange. And I hope it gets unraveled. I hope we get some more answers here of why, and specifics as well, which I know you're very concerned with in terms of what happened. So please, Biljana, keep us updated. Let us know what's happening. Stay safe and continue to be strong and brave, and you'll get through this, okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate your time. Thank you for talking with us.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate your invitation. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.